Our message today is, what about time? And time is one of those, well, it's mysterious, it's intriguing. I don't understand time. You might understand it, but whenever I begin to study time, or when I've heard professors who study such things, I don't know what you would call them, timologists, I have no idea what you would call them. I don't understand time, I don't understand what you'd call them, somebody who studies it. But they tell us that time is, it's not the same, that it's relative, that it constantly changes. You've all heard the story of a guy that gets in a spacecraft, goes the speed of light for 2 years, and then returns to Earth after that 2 years, and like 90 years has passed here on Earth, while only 2 years has passed for him. Time changes with speed, and time changes with gravity, and there's quantum physics and the bending of space and time, and Newton understood it when he came up with the idea of relativity. I don't understand it today. I don't understand Newton. I don't understand those things at all, and so it intrigues me. I find myself thinking about time in those kind of weird ways. So have, by the way, the creators of The Twilight Zone. They've had many, many of their little skits dealing with time, right? I remember as a kid watching Star Trek, where they would deal with concepts of time travel. More recently, there was a show called Quantum Leap, which dealt with quantum physics and traveling through time. There were movies about time, Somewhere in Time. Remember the old Christopher Reeves movie? Love story kind of a thing for you ladies. Then there was Time After Time, and there was Back to the Future, which we all remember. And you may even remember that Superman flew backwards around the world to reverse time to save Lois Lane. And, so I just had to throw that in. And, do you know what kind of dog keeps the best time? A watchdog. All right, well, I'm glad that there was someone here who knew. And I wanted to throw in the bad joke and get that thing out of the way here at this point. But the truth is, we all have been given the same amount of time. We all move through time, and God's created that. The world that he's created, out of all the things that he created, to me, time is the most intriguing. He created space. He created matter, mountains and oceans and seas and stars and moons. He created the space that we all move through, but he also created time, and that we live in time. And remember, God lives outside of time. God created it. He lives outside of it. That's why he can see the beginning from the end. He looks at time because he created it all. He sees what's going to happen, and he sees what has happened while we're moving through time. As a kid, did you ever look at the sky and say, I wonder where things start? I wonder where things end? There has to be a start, but there can't be a start. There has to be an end, but there can't be an end. Or how about God? God has to have a beginning, but God can't have a beginning, but he's got to have a beginning, but he can't have a beginning, but he's got to have a beginning, but he can't have a beginning. Ah! And then on the other end, he's got to have an end, but he can't have an end, but he's got to have an end, but he can't have an end. And so you think of those things, but you're putting God into the time, space, matter continuum. You've got to remove God from that. But you and I, we move through time. We've all been given the same amount of time. I did some calculations. I'm bad at arithmetic, but if my arithmetic is right here, each one of us has 86,400 seconds a day, which translates to 1,440 minutes a day, which is, of course, 24 hours a day. All of us have the same, but not all of us get the same thing done, do we? Not all of us do the same amount of things. There are some of you, and you were born on time, and you're still on time. Others of you, you were born late, and you're still late. I have friends that no matter what time I get to lunch with them, they're always there before me. I'll show up 10 minutes early. They're sitting there waiting for me. They're always there before I get there. I have other friends that I know he's going to be. I have one particular friend in mind. I know he's going to be 15 minutes late. So when I leave my house to have lunch with him, I wait 10 minutes and I get there and he is still late, even after I've gotten there deliberately late, knowing who it is. I've also discovered in management that if I really want something done here at the church, I want to get it done fast, that I go to the busiest person on staff. The person that's doing the most, they're the one that's going to get it done. Why that's the case? I don't really understand it. You would think you'd go to the person that has the least amount of work, and they'd get it done quicker. But if I go to the person who's the busiest, I found that they get it done. Some of you guys, no matter what, you can't be on time. You even change your clock so that it's not the real time, which I don't understand that concept. You're late everywhere you go, so you change your clock. And now before you can get there, you've got to do arithmetic before you go. It would never work for me, I'll tell you that. I saw someone's clock like that not long ago. They had it set for a different time, and I saw it, and I panicked. Oh, man, I'm late, and I took off. They go, no, no, wait a minute, and they told me exactly what time it was. So they knew exactly what time it is. They're just playing a mind game with themselves. How does that really work? I don't get it. But here in this chapter, in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, Solomon is dealing with this concept of time and the fact that we're moving through time. And there's a time to do everything. His concept here in this chapter is that man lives in a rut. You're in a rut. You do the same thing every morning. You get up and you take your shower, right? At least we hope you do. Maybe there's some of you, we wish that would be a rut in your life. We brush our teeth, you know, our teeth or our tooth, if that's the case. We brush it, you know, a couple, three times a day. We've got certain things that we do. For me, in my routine, on Saturday and Wednesday, my routine's different than every other day. Because on Wednesday night and Saturday night, I have services that evening. So I like to eat lunch at a certain time. I do certain things and get my studies prepared and ready. And I've gotten into this rut where if my routine gets messed up on those days, I turn head over heels trying to get things together for the service or services that I'm going to be doing either that night or the next day. We have this routine that we get into. And Solomon here is going to talk about that routine. And he's going to say at the end of talking about that routine, what's it all worth? We get up in the morning, we go to bed. We get up in the morning, we go to bed. We get up in the morning, we go to bed. We get up in the morning, we go to bed. And what's it all worth and what does it all mean? My son, actually both of my sons, have lizards as pets. My one son has a leopard gecko, pretty neat creature. But my favorite is my other son's. He's got a bearded dragon, a young bearded dragon, named Spike. And Spike is great. I love to feed Spike crickets because Spike, when you walk up near him, he's thinking that food's coming, and his head will turn, and his little eye will look at you, and you put the cricket in there, and he'll look at it and jump off his rock and run over and dang, 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 swallow that cricket. It's a pretty fun thing to watch. In fact, I ask Dave often, have you fed Spike today? Because I want to feed him. I want to feed Spike. But Spike's life is an interesting life. He lives, and every once in a while, we'll take him out and carry him around before we put him back into his little terrarium. But he lives in this 10-gallon terrarium because he's young. Now, he's going to be, I don't know how long he's going to end up being, 18, 19 inches. So we'll have to move him into a bigger, you know, home after a while. But right now, he's in a 10-gallon aquarium. You know, that's changed into an aquarium. It's got a screen on the top. It's a 10-gallon. You can picture a 10-gallon fish tank in your mind. On one side, there's a fake tree that has suction cups on it, which is stuck to the side of the, you know, glass. And then on the other side, there's one of those kind of cool looking fake rocks that he climbs up on every day. And then there's a lamp that's over the top that we turn on as fake sun for him to crawl up on this rock. And Spike does the same thing every day. At night, he crawls up in the tree, goes to sleep, and in the morning, he crawls out of the tree, back up on the rock where he sits all day long. I guarantee you, it's where he's at right now. At home, he's up on his rock because that's what he does. And who knows what goes off in his mind, but at about 7:30, he climbs off of his rock. And if you're there, hey, he's moving. And he climbs off the rock, and he climbs up the tree, and he closes his eyes, and he goes to sleep until the next morning when he climbs out of his tree and back on his rock. Until that night where he climbs off of his rock and back up to the tree. And then and I walked in there yesterday and I'm thinking about the study that I'm doing today and about Solomon's life as a routine that just goes and goes and goes. And I'm looking at Spike and he's got his foot, I don't know what you call a lizard's foot, his foot, his paw, whatever it is. He's got it upside down on the rock and he's got his back foot upside down. His other feet are over here and he's just hanging out there on the rock. And I'm thinking, I couldn't do that. I couldn't just go through life like Spike goes through life. I couldn't sit on a rock all day long. And the only thing I have to look forward to is every other day they throw a couple crickets in. Look at that. I'm going to get that. And go and tear it up and eat it up. See, Spike doesn't worry about his life. I've never heard Spike say, there's got to be more to life than this. Right? But see, you and I, even though our lives may be more complicated than Spike's, you and I get to that point, don't we? We get into our grind, and day by day, we go and we do, and we make the dinner, and we do the dishes, and we do the laundry, and we go to bed, and we get up the next day, and we go to work, or we do, and it's just our life, and we finally get to the point where we say, there's got to be more to life than this. That's Solomon's observation. Solomon sees the routine that men are living in, and he says, what good is it? There's thousands, hundreds of thousands, and we know today millions, billions of people all around the world living in their routines, just like you live in your routine. And what good is it? And so in verse 1 of Ecclesiastes chapter 3, Solomon says, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. Those of us who were alive in the 60s, all we can hear there is the bird song. Right? You got to get that out of your mind, because he didn't write this to be poetic. He didn't write it to put it into a song to say, there's a time for everything. There's a time to mourn, and there's a time to laugh, and there's a time to gather stones, and there's the time to throw away stones. That's just life. You've got it. He didn't write it that way. Solomon wrote this using the word a time, a time, a time, a time, a time, so that by the time you got to the end of the list, you would be bored out of your gourd. Because that's what he's saying. There's a time to live and a time to die and a time to gather and a time to throw away and a time to plant and a time to harvest and blah, 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 blah. Life is one big long routine. That's what he's saying. This is the condition that God has given man, is that he goes through and he does what he does. And in the end, what's it all worth? In the end, what does it all mean? If you and I, and listen now, don't discover the purpose of our lives. Because see, I don't know that Spike has a purpose in that life that he's got, going up to his tree and back to his rock and up to his tree and back to his rock. But as I'm going from my rock to my tree, from my rock to my tree in the routine that I live in, I've got a purpose. God's given me a purpose in that. It makes life worthwhile. Some of you, right now, life isn't worthwhile to you. Some of you are saying, what's the use? Why should I even get up for another day? Some of you haven't discovered the very purpose that God has created you, that he's got purposes for you. First of all, it's to know him. But secondly, there's things that God has called you to do. There's areas where God has put you that he wants for you. There's things that he wants you to do. And so he says a couple of things here which give us insight. And again, you got to get this song, the bird song, out of your mind. To everything there's a season. He says, life is a series of seasons. And that's important for us to understand, because a season, one thing about a season is it's prolonged. Seasons, you usually get sick of them. Maybe you don't get so sick of spring and so sick of fall, but you certainly get sick of summer, don't you? What was it, 110 here this last week? I happened to be out of town for those days, by the way. But you know, you get sick and you say, I really would like it to be cold. But then winter comes along, and I can't believe that I thought this, but near the end of winter last time, I thought, I kind of look forward to when I walk out at night and it's really still hot. It's still 90 degrees at night. Now I wonder what I was thinking when I was hoping for that. But I guess if you're going to live in Tucson and love it, you're going to look for those kind of days. You're going to look for those kind of things to happen. But there's a season, and seasons are prolonged. And you are going through a season right now. Some of you are in tough seasons, and some of you are in easy seasons. Some of you are in a good season of your life. Some of you are going through a very difficult season. But know this. Your season's going to change. If there's anything that we know for sure, you're going to change seasons in your life. And so if you feel like it's mundane, I can't take it anymore, just wait. Another season will come along. It may be a prolonged section in your life, but another season will come. And here's what he says, and this is a key to this chapter. To every purpose under heaven. He doesn't say there's a time for every purpose above heaven. He doesn't say we're looking for every purpose that God has given us. He says there's a time for every purpose under heaven. He's going to look at life now from the perspective of this earth. And here he goes. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck what was planted. A time to kill, like when you give a cricket to Spike. A time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. And I've tried that dancing thing. Never again. There's never a time for me again to dance. A time to cast away stones. A time to gather stones. A time to embrace. A time to refrain from embracing. A time to gain. A time to lose. A time to keep. A time to throw away. A time to tear. A time to sow. A time of silence. Some of you really need to hear that. A time to speak. A time to love. A time to hate. A time of war. And a time of peace. And he did it so lengthy, just to get to the point where we would say, this is just over and over and over and over again. And here's his conclusion in verse 9. What profit has the worker for that which he labors? What profit is there? So you've done this. Maybe you're older and you've harvested and you've harvested and you've harvested. What's the purpose for it all? Now, the remainder of the chapter, he gives his personal evaluations of that question. What purpose is there for all of our labor? And now he's going to break it down to several different observations. Some of these observations are right. Some of them he looks at, and we can look at other scriptures that back up what he says, and they're right. And some of his observations are wrong. His first observation is correct. And then he falls into this concept of man. What he's talking about, he doesn't say, and I prayed and I sought God as to what purpose man has here on this earth. That isn't what he says. He finally gets there, by the way, when we get to chapter 12. But right now what he's saying is, I looked and I saw and I perceived. It's all very much from a human perspective. If this is all life is, can you imagine not knowing God and just going through the routine? You think about your life and sometimes how you get sick of the grind. You know, as soon as you do a load of laundry, there's another load of laundry to do, right? And I that's with a family of five. Maybe you've got a family of seven. I can't even imagine it. How many, you know, washing machines must you have for a family of seven or eight? Because ours never stops. Walk in the house, it's always on. I want to wash some jeans. I can't do it because it's always going. Imagine if you feel that way, you're a Christian. You walk with God and you know him. And you're looking for God to use you and to empower you and to strengthen you. Can you imagine what it's like for people in the world who don't know Christ? What must life be like for them? No wonder often they say, I don't want to get up out of bed. No wonder they get to the point where they say, I can't go on anymore and I can't take it anymore and I don't know what to do. Hey, if we struggle with it as Christians and we know God, can you imagine what it's like for them? Can you imagine the depths of the despair of someone who says, I'm living for myself and this is all that I'm living for? So here's Solomon's conclusions. As I said, some of them are right, some of them are wrong, but he's looking from a human perspective. He says, I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He says, I've seen the things that God has given us to do in our lives daily. God made this world, he gave us this time to move through, and he's given us these tasks to do, and I've seen them. Then here's a conclusion, his first one. He says, he has made everything beautiful in its time. In other words, as I'm going through my routine as a Christian, God's working in me day by day. He's daily changing me. You know, we sang that song again today, the Keith Green song. He's daily changing me, rearranging me. I've been born again. As a born-again Christian, my life is daily changed by him. And he takes me through the grind and he takes me through the routine. And sometimes I understand it and sometimes I don't. It says he makes everything beautiful in its time. He's working to make my life beautiful, to make your life beautiful. Then he says in verse 11, also he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. God's also put eternity in your hearts, and he's put eternity in my heart. See, the thing about Spike is Spike isn't eternal. Spike isn't going to be up in heaven. I'm sorry to tell you guys that, who are looking for your animals to actually be up in heaven. And see, some people really get mad at me when I say that. And they'll write me letters about how, you know, their dogs are human. I'm sorry, they're not human. And I understand. See, for a non-dog person, you know, when someone loses a dog and they get into a, you know, kind of like a fit of depression because they lost their dog, you guys who have lost animals, you know what I'm talking about. Hey, you don't understand that, but I lost a dog here recently. I've had dogs die on me, and it's a tough thing. And I'm a dog kind of a person. But when I don't think the dogs are going to be up in heaven because God hasn't put eternity in their heart. My dog, you know, my last dog, would kind of just go through its routine. Kind of like Spike, it was a bit more complicated, but did the same thing. My dog never said, I can't take this anymore. I can't take life. It's just the same thing every day after day after day. Why? Because eternity wasn't set in her heart. But eternity is set in my heart. And I look forward to being with God. And this is a great outlook that he has. In the end, he says, in the end of verse 11, we don't know what God's doing from the beginning to the end. I don't know what God's doing in my life. And so from time to time, I ask him, why? You do that? Why? Why, God, why? Why couldn't you have changed that? You could have just prompted my heart to do something a little bit different, and that would have never have happened. Why did that person do that? Why did that tragedy take place? Why did this illness happen? Why did I lose my husband? Why did I lose a child? Why, God? God is making all things beautiful in his time. And even though it might not be beautiful, he's making your life beautiful. That's what the Bible says in Romans 8:28, and God causes all things to work together for the good. He doesn't say all things are good, he just says all things are caused to work together for the good to those who love him. Now his next conclusion here I don't believe is right. Verse 11 I believe is correct. He's making all things beautiful in his time as I go through my daily routine. That's why we keep going, because God's daily changing, rearranging me. Verse 12, it says, I know that nothing is better for them to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of his labor. It is a gift from God. He says, there's nothing better from a human perspective for people to do than just eat, drink, and be merry. If this is all you have, you're just going through life. You're doing what you're doing day by day. It's just a routine. I mean, think about Sunday morning. You know, how many years have you gone to this church? How many Sunday mornings have you come and sat in the same exact seats week after week after week after week after week after week, just going through and doing the things that you're doing? He says, hey, if it's such a routine, there's nothing better. Might as well rejoice or enjoy life. Might as well eat, drink, and be merry. And from a human perspective, if you don't know God, if you don't have the purpose of eternity, if you don't know God, well, then you might as well do that. Nothing better for you to do than that. And then in verse 14, he says, I know that whatever God does, it is forever. God's working in my life. He's working in the daily process of that daily grind. And whatever he does is forever. Nothing can be added to it. Nothing can be taken from it. See, when God does something, he does it for real. See, when I do something, I make mistakes. So a lot of times I reverse what I do, right? It's like the undo button on a computer. Or when I'm playing solitaire and it's got an undo button and I constantly cheat on it because I get to a place where I made a mistake. Undo, 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 undo. And then I go back and I win it and go, yes, I won. Well, I cheated. I hit the undo button. And I believe in the undo button for life. Why? Because I make a lot of mistakes. What I do isn't for eternal. And I even think sometimes I hear from God. So we set off in a direction and then I go, wait a minute. I don't think I did hear from God. I think I made a mistake. And I'm not afraid to put it in reverse. Those of you who have been around here long enough, you've heard me say that before. I'm not afraid to back out completely of something if I think it's the wrong thing to do. But God doesn't do that. Verse 14, I know that what God does, it is forever. God doesn't say, whoops. God doesn't say, I was making things beautiful in your life and, oh no. Can you imagine hearing God? He's working in your life, goes, oops. What? What happened? I can't believe you made a mistake. God doesn't make mistakes. God doesn't drop planets. God doesn't blow it in our lives. What he does forever. It goes on to say, God does it that men should fear before him. Men should be in awe before God. In verse 15, he goes on, another one of his conclusions, that which is has already been, and what is to be has already been. And God requires an account of what is past. Isn't that great? Isn't that a great verse? I had to read it 20 times to understand what it was saying. I'm not even sure I still understand what it was saying. You ever read verses like that? You read it and go, what is he trying to say? Well, here's what I think he's trying to say. I think that God's giving him some insight into time. See, God sits outside of time. We talked about this in the beginning of our study. An analogy that Chuck Smith used, and I love this analogy, is of a man standing on a corner watching a parade go by. There's a marching band, and then there's a float, and there's another marching band, and there's some clowns, and there's some horses, and then there's some men with shovels, and then there's another marching band that comes along behind it. And he's watching this parade go by. But there's another man in a helicopter above the parade. And he can look and he can see the beginning of the parade, and he can see the end of the parade. I haven't talked to you guys about this in this service, have I? See, sometimes when you do five services, you forget and think, I'm saying the same thing. They're all going, he just talked about this. He's repeating himself. And I wonder if it's going to get worse as I get older. But anyway, he can see the beginning of the parade, and he can see the end of the parade. And if he had a walkie-talkie, he could talk to the guy in the corner. And he could say, hey, look, there's a really neat Snoopy float coming up behind you that you're going to see here in just a little while. So hang out until the Snoopy float comes by, and then everything else is a drag so you can leave. And see, God is looking like from the helicopter at our lives. And God says, that's going to happen, and that's going to happen. God even looks at all of mankind, and he says, well, there's coming a time that's worse than this world will ever see. And before that, there's coming a time when all the armies of the world will surround Jerusalem. And of course, we have a conflict like what's going on today, and we begin to wonder, is this the beginning of the end of what God said, that the armies would surround Jerusalem, and there would be this battle that would involve the whole world? I'm not saying that it is, by the way. My prayer is that this conflict would be taken care of quickly, but it's possible. God told us beforehand that it was going to happen. And so God is outside of time, and he's looking at us in time, and he tells us all about time through the scriptures. That's how come God knows the beginning from the end. But yet, Solomon's point is, you're still required for what passes. That which is has already been, that which takes place has already taken place in God's eyes, but you are still required for the life that you live. Then he goes on, verse 16, moreover I saw, and I've underlined the words I saw there, because he didn't say, moreover I sought God. He just says, moreover I saw. This is his own thoughts. Moreover I saw under the sun, he emphasizes, not above the sun, under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. And in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. In this daily routine that men are going through, a time to plant, a time to reap, and a time to sow, and a time born, a time to die, in this daily routine, things aren't fair. Have you guys noticed that? When you were a kid, you always thought everything was going to be fair. Till the first time you were in school in the cafeteria line and somebody cut in front of you, you couldn't believe it. Because it wasn't fair. You waited your time, he should wait his time. How about when your mom brought two bowls of ice cream for you and your sister, and she had a bigger scoop than what you had? Mom, that's not fair. And what would your mom say to you? Life's not always fair. What do you say to your kids? Life's not always fair. But see, I read in the Reader's Digest a couple of years ago now about a particular man who raped and murdered a woman. He was caught. He was brought to trial. They found him guilty. Then the jury had to determine what kind of a sentence they would give, whether they would sentence him to life in prison or whether they would give him the death penalty. And the jury chose, for whatever reasons, life in prison without parole. Well, a judge came along a few years later, reevaluated life in prison without parole, and decided that this man needed to have life in prison with parole. And after being given life in prison with parole, then a parole board talked with him and determined that he was rehabilitated and let him out after 12 years. Raped, murdered a woman. 12 years later, he's back out on the streets. In 6 months, he raped and killed another woman. And once again, the jury gave him life in prison without parole. Now, I personally, I read that story, and personally, I say they should have given him the death penalty. Now, that's my personal opinion. You may differ than that, and it's okay. You don't have to agree with me on everything that I believe. You may not believe in the death penalty. That's fine. That's all right. You don't have to, I don't have to agree with you. You don't have to agree with me on everything, but I think they should have given him the death penalty. But even if you don't believe in the death penalty, you still think that's unfair. Because that second woman didn't have to lose her life. Her children didn't have to be motherless. Her father and mother didn't have to have their daughter raped and brutally murdered. And so you look and you go, it's not fair. But I love Solomon's conclusion. Verse 17, I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, and there is a time for every purpose and for every work. In other words, Solomon is saying, you're not getting away with anything. There may be a lack of justice here, but God is the great, He'll make everything equal. God is the great equalizer. Verse 18, and I said in my heart, concerning the condition of the sons of men, God tests men. As we're going through our routine and our grind, God tests us. But he doesn't test us so he can know whether or not, or what our character is, or whether or not we're really getting what it is that we should be getting. He tests us because he wants us to know whether or not we get it. We come into this place, we hear a sermon on love, and then we're standing in line at the DMV on Monday. Somebody cuts in front of us. Did we really learn the lesson? And we fail the lesson, of course, because we're going to be there forever now if somebody cuts in front of us. It's worse. We're already there forever, much less when someone cuts in front of us. And so he says, concerning the condition of the sons of men, God tests them that they may see that they themselves are like animals. See, now again, he's talking about life under the sun. If you don't believe in God, if you think that you are just, here, that years ago you cried out, you climbed out of the muck and the mire as a salamander, that got sunburned and got a freckle on your head and it turned into an eyeball. And again, I love what Chuck Smith says. Aren't you glad it wasn't on your butt instead of your head and you'd have eyes on your butt? But that freckle ends up turning into an eyeball, and then you've just here, and here we are, we're people, and we're no different than the animals. Well, if that's, what you believe without a God, then that's what you believe. He says, verse 19, for what happens to the sons of men also happens to the animals. One thing befalls them as one dies, so dies the other. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over the animals, for all is vanity. Again, he's talking about life under the sun, life under heaven apart from God, just like the animals, if that's what it's about. All go to one place, all are from the dust, and all return to dust. Who knows the spirit of the sons of men, which go upward, or the spirit of the animals, which go down to the earth? He says, you know, who knows? He's not saying in a statement, he goes, who knows? Did the spirit of men go up and the spirit of animals go down? Again, I want to remind you that animals will not be up in heaven. Animal spirits will not be up in heaven because they don't have a spirit, because they're not eternal. And again, as a, you know, as a dog person, I'm kind of bummed out that my dogs aren't going to be up there in heaven with me. But I take kind of delight in the fact that there'll be no cats there. Sorry for you cat owners. And really, if you do have cats, it's great that you have them. I just wanted to let you know that. I think it's fantastic that you have cats. But nevertheless, our spirit goes up and the animals go down and they don't exist. And I'm going to get letters. I'll guarantee you, I will get letters. Verse 22. So I perceived, and this is his ultimate conclusion about the grind of life that we go through. So I perceived that nothing is better that a man should rejoice in his own work, and that for that is his heritage. And who can bring him to see what will happen after him? He says the end of it all is just go ahead and enjoy your work. The eat, the drink, and the be merry kind of a thing. But that's not for us. For us, I go back to God makes everything beautiful in his time. And even though day by day goes by, there's not a day that's wasted. Because God is daily changing me. God is daily working in my life. And what seems like a day of routine, every one of my Tuesdays are the same. They start off with a staff meeting in the morning, and there's meetings with different people that are on staff, and then I've got a lunch usually that's set up with someone for something, and then I've got the afternoon, and then I just go through the day. My Wednesdays are the same. My Thursdays are the same. My Fridays are the same. But God's doing his work in me day by day. I am a different person today than I was a year ago, with all of those days going by, because God is making everything beautiful in his time. And my conclusion, living above the sun, there's nothing better for man to do than to walk with his God. By the way, that's where Solomon gets to by chapter 12. The earthly conclusion is there's nothing better for man to do than just eat, drink, and be merry, and work, and enjoy your work. Might as well do it. But the end, that we would walk with God. For he has put eternity in our hearts. And I don't know what purpose God has for you. But I know that God has given you a purpose to know him, and then that God has filled you with his spirit and gifted you to do a work that he's called you to do. And I want to find all the purposes that God has for me. Let's stand up and pray.